Good morning. So many of you know that I play music. A lot of people don't know how deep that rabbit hole goes. So I was actually trained to be a classical musician way back when. Things like that. I was at one point a certified classical teacher for both classical piano and classical guitar in the Royal Conservatory of Music in Canada, which sounds way more impressive than it really is. But the problem is, though, I don't do a lot of it anymore. One, because I don't use it. My house now is all Disney show tunes, so it's, you know, Little Aladdin and stuff like that. Our daughter runs around the house and sings and stuff like that. The other thing is that my hands don't work as fast as my brain does. That's the biggest problem. I can't get my fingers to do what I want it to do. My real strength and why I was in it is because I understood classical music. So it was fun when I went to college. I went to be a worship leader. And you get the problem when you do stuff like that, there's a large gamut of people. So you have people like me who have been playing instruments their entire lives and done all this classical music stuff. And then you also have people who are like, I bought a guitar last week and I love Jesus, let's praise. And you're like, ooh, put them all in the same class. So a couple of us had to go do extra classes. We got the privilege of extra classes. And so we did things like music harmony and theory and music history and stuff at a college down the road. And one of the people I did that with was a girl named Heather. And Heather is a dear friend of mine, I love her. So we did these classes together. She actually grew up not far from where my mom grew up. She ended up marrying my roommate. Know her very well, love her. And as life happens, she just didn't get to finish college. She didn't get to finish her classes. So a little while ago, about a year ago, maybe a little longer, she went back to school. Another reason I love Heather, she's not a quitter. So she's going back to school and she's redoing all these courses and getting her certification and all this stuff. And she got to a point where she didn't know what to do. So she put the question on the internet, because that's where you get all your answers, and asked a whole bunch of us, said, okay, who can tell me what this chord is? And I looked at it and I immediately went, well, that's a C6-4 chord. She said, yes. Why? I don't understand it. That's what the book says, but why is it that chord? Because a C6-4 chord sounds like this. And she was convinced, I'm gonna get technical, sorry. She was convinced it was a second inversion of an F chord. Did you hear the difference? If the person next to you said they did, they're a liar. There's no difference. It's exactly the same chord. They're exactly the same notes. And that's where she got really confused. She's like, wait a minute. How come your name is right and my name is wrong, even though they're the exact same notes? There's no difference. And the reason, and I had explained this, but the reason it was different is because of an understanding of music. Music follows patterns. Music takes you places. And I don't mean that metaphorically, like, oh, it takes me places. No, like, it actually follows rhyme and reason. So if I was to go like this, yeah, there it is. Someone always has to sing it. They know it's coming. You can't leave it. You know, it's a pattern. You know what's coming. When I was in college, again, this is just me being me, but we had a piano by the door of one of the classes, and I worked my way through college. I had to have after-school jobs and whatnot. So the last class of the day had a piano by the door, and I was usually the first one out. And so I would leave, and as I was leaving, I'd go and just keep going. And inevitably, you get halfway down the hall and you'd hear. Because someone has to finish it. It's music goes places. There's a pattern. You have to hear it. You know what it is. So part of the reason that I was able to name this chord and Heather was having a problem with it is she was looking at the notes in the chord, the notes directly there. Whereas I was looking at the whole piece of music. A C6-4 chord is named that way, not because of what the music is, it's named that way because of where the music is going. It's given that name because it's going to do something else in a minute. A C6-4 chord generally turns into a C chord. So by itself, it sounds like this, but in the bigger piece of music, it sounds like a C6-4 chord, C. It's meant to take you somewhere. So it's named based on where you're going, not necessarily where you are. And we do this a lot. Like, a lot of times, this is part of why I love working with teenagers, I'll be honest, because a lot of people look at teenagers and they go, you're a G-sharp diminished 13th chord. And some of those notes aren't even notes. That's just where you spilled food on the music. Like, that's not how it goes. That's an actual chord. I didn't make that up. It's a very, if I cram it together, it sounds like this. Isn't that beautiful? Beautiful chord. By itself, and if you don't understand it, yeah, it looks like that. But a G-sharp, a diminished chord in general, is what's called a transition chord. You don't write music around it. It's a period of transition in the part of the bigger music. So if you're hearing a nice piece of music and it's going somewhere pretty, then you add that chord. See, it can be beautiful if you understand where it fits in the entire piece. This is kind of like how we name things, though. We kind of look at things and we see them up and down and we go, well, that's your name. That's where you came from. I mean, do you know where your name came from? Not what it means, where it came, like why you were named the way, whatever you were named. Like, I know mine. It was a beautiful time in my life. So I was probably a little under junior high age, somewhere around there. And I learned what the name Troy means. And if you know the history of that, it's the Greek city-state of Troy, the Trojan warriors, the Iliad, Helen of Troy, Schliemann treasure, all sorts of cool things. I'm like, man, my name's really cool. And then one day, I was sitting at home flipping through the channels. Some of you have no idea what that means. We didn't all have on-demand TV or the little TV guide button. How many of you remember years ago going, nope, 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 remember channel 21? No, no. Hey, some of you remember walking up to the TV. No, no, no. Yeah. So anyway, I was sitting there and I was doing the whole thing like, okay, flipping through the channels. No, no. And I'm like, that's a crummy black and white movie. And I was about to hit the channel button and my mom goes, ooh, that's Troy Donahue. That's who you're named after. What? Someone who is so important to you that we've never seen any of his movies or heard of him before. Awesome. It was like soul crushing. Like, I thought my name was important. It had meaning. It was nice. And no, I'm named after some guy you had a crush on when you were in high school. Then I realized my mother had crushes on boys when she's in high school. And that caused a whole other series of soul crushing experiences. But that's what we do, right? A lot of times our names are just, oh, it sounds nice, or it reminds me of so-and-so. There's not a lot of meaning. Whereas years and years ago, a lot of times names really had meaning. Some people here might remember when I preached a long time ago, I was asked to share my favorite Bible story. And I shared the story of Ehud, which is he ends up killing the fattest man in the Bible and escaping through the toilet. Very good junior high boy story. It's in Judges 3, if you're intrigued. You can read it later on. But part of that story is, it goes very quick. It says, it's the story of Ehud, a left-handed man from the tribe of Benjamin. And it seems like a little throwaway information. But if you understand what his name means, see, some older scriptures don't say he was left-handed. They just say he was unable to use his right hand. We've shortened that to mean left-handed because that could be it. Or he could have been unable to use his right hand. Maybe he was crippled. Maybe there was something wrong. But the name Ehud means weakling. So there's a lot of theory that maybe he did have some sort of physical deformity. But what do you think it meant to go through life called a weakling? Like, that was his name. That's what everyone knew him as and called him as. Weakling. One of the more famous ones in the Bible are Jacob and Esau. Those are great ones because their meanings are fantastic. You've got Esau, they're twins. Esau was born first. He was born hairy. So Esau sounds like the word in Hebrew for hair. So, hey, little hairball, here you go. They named him hair because he was hairy. That's just nice, isn't it? Where Jacob, Jacob was born holding on to Ehud's heel. So Jacob was given the name. It's two Hebrew words put together. One is the word for heel. The other one is swindler or deceiver or he that like will steal from you. And I always wonder how much of Jacob's life was, we recognize that you're a swindler and we gave you that name, or I've just been called swindler my whole life, so guess what? I'm just going to live into it. Because if you know the story of Jacob, he was a swindler. He stole his birthright from his brother. He stole the blessing of the firstborn from his father. He swindled his father-in-law out of all sorts of flocks and sheep and goats. Like he was a swindler. He very much lived up to his name. Until one day, when he was on his way home and he was camping, scripture says, as he was camping, a person came into the camp, who was God, and started to wrestle Jacob. I always wonder how that came about, because it doesn't mention any conversation happening, just, let's wrestle, all right. So they wrestle all night long. And God at one point takes Jacob and pops his hip out of joint, and Jacob still doesn't give up. He holds on and he wrestles, and it says, as the dawn was coming, the stranger or God said, you need to let me go. I need to go. And Jacob's like, no. I've earned something for this. You've got to bless me. You've got to give me something. Like I'm not letting go until I get something from you. And so God says, all right, this is what I'm going to give you. You're no longer going to be named Jacob. Your new name is Israel. Because see, the name Israel means God fights. Not God fought, not I did this, God fights. God doesn't give him a name based on who he is. God now gives him a new name based on where he's going. One of the other more famous name changes in the Bible is Simon the disciple of Jesus. And after a few months of being a disciple and working with Jesus and walking around wherever they were, they get to a point where all the disciples are with Jesus, all by themselves off in some area. And Jesus says, hey, I have a question for you all. Who do the people say I am? And the disciples give all sorts of great answers. Some say you're Messiah, or some say you're Moses, some say you're a prophet, some say you're Elijah. Jesus goes, okay, who do you say I am? And it's Simon who speaks up. Simon says, well, you're the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And Jesus says, okay, since you've named me correctly, I'm going to name you correctly. Your new name is Peter, which means rock, because upon this rock, I will build my church. See, again, when God sees us and he names us, he doesn't name us based on necessarily the chords or the notes in front of you. He sees the whole piece of music, and he names us based on where we're going. He sees more of the story. And I know some of you are listening to this and you're going, this is all a wonderful, wonderful story for you to tell your teenagers because they're all trying to figure out who they are in life and things like that. But do you realize like where these guys were in life when God was renaming them? Like Jacob, we don't know how old he is, but we know that Jacob, his dad was dying of old age when he left and went to work for his father-in-law for 14 years and 1 month at least, maybe even longer. I mean, he was well past his prime when God's like, guess what? You've lived in this way too long. We've got something new for you to do. Simon, we know he was an adult because Jesus made him pay the temple tax, which only adults had to do. We know he was married because Jesus healed his mother-in-law. And we also know he had his own business. He had his own boat. It's interesting when you read the stories of the fishermen at the beginning, Simon and Andrew are named Simon and Andrew. But the guys who worked with them, James and John, always say James and John, son of Zebedee, like they're younger or they're part of the family business or dad owns the boat. Not with Simon. It says Jesus got into Simon's boat. He was a successful businessman with his own business selling fish, married, everything else. He was very well established when Jesus showed up and said, hey, let's go fish for people. Okay, away he went. When he was renamed, God took this time to let him know, hey, this is where you are. But I've got something bigger and better planned, and we're going to go somewhere new. I mean, right now we've got this time of year is New Year's. You're all going to make some wonderful New Year's resolutions that you're going to keep for a solid 3 weeks. Let's just be honest with ourselves. That's your odds right now. But I think part of the reason is that a lot of people make resolutions and they don't know why. They're just good ideas. Like, yeah, it's not a bad idea to eat less chocolate. But why do you want to do that? Or I love like when people say, holy ones, like we're going to read through the Bible in a year. Well, that's great. It is. But do you know why you're reading through the Bible? Or, and I'll say this too, because I work with teenagers. Please don't start at the beginning. The Bible, the word Bible is the shortened version of the Latin word for library. When I go to a library, I don't just start at the beginning and work my way through. I pick the book I want. Like, start with a gospel. Start somewhere with Jesus is a great idea. You don't have to read them in order. It's a library. I don't go to a library and read books in order. Maybe you do. I don't know. You're all kind of staring at me. All right. You're lots of fun on New Year's Eve. Enjoy yourselves. But it's how it's supposed to be. But we make these resolutions just because they sound nice. Now, if you were to join one of the gyms down there, and you got a personal trainer, and you said, I really want to do this, you know what's one of the first questions they're going to ask you? What's your goal? How much weight do you want to lose? Why are you here? Why did you get this membership? What's the point? What if, instead of just deciding, hey, we're going to do all these nice holy things for Jesus in the coming year, what if we took some time and actually started to pray? Pray like God was actually going to answer and ask, God, how do you see me? What's the name that you have for me? What do you have planned for me to do? And see how that shapes what Bible studies we join or where we serve or what we do. Because then we have a reason. We understand what we're doing and why. And I'm not saying this to say God's going to uphold your, like throw your life into a whole tailspin. Maybe he will. I don't know. Maybe God will even be nice enough to say, hey, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. You're exactly the child that I created you to be. Wouldn't that be fantastic to hear? That might even be better than hearing something's different, that you're exactly where you're supposed to be. But what if this year we took some time, just said, God, how do you see me? Who do you see me as? Where do you want me to serve? Where do you want me to share your love with people? And maybe try some things out. I know a whole bunch of G-sharp diminished 13s that would love to have you. Just try something new, and maybe it fits. Maybe it's very clear that that's not where God wants you to be. So we try somewhere else, and we go somewhere else and try something new. But what if we took the time just to let God speak to us and be like, let me tell you who you are. I mean, it was interesting. I've seen this happen. Because I remember years ago when I first started doing the contemporary service, back when it was even in this room, there was a guy named Brian who was leading it before me. Brian's a lovely guy. Love him. He had a heart of gold. He did not know how to play music. And leading worship was kind of hard because it was not a good fit. It's not where he was meant to be. Thankfully, though, some people were nice enough and loving enough to tell him, I don't think you're supposed to be playing guitar and singing. But that doesn't mean Jesus doesn't have something for you. Let's try something else over here. And he ended up teaching Sunday school. I think it was third grade boys. Third grade boys Sunday school. He did so fantastic with those boys that when they were done, the parents actually met with the pastors and said, can he not leave? Like, can they move up with him? Can he go to the next grade too? Because that's where he was supposed to be. It took that understanding that maybe this is not who I'm meant to be and moving into a new calling that God had for him. That, and he did fantastic. Like, you could tell just by watching him, that's who God made him to be. What if this year we tried that? What if this year we took some time to have Jesus tell us, this is who I think you are, and this is how you can live it out? I know one thing that we can all say, and one name we can all share, one title at least, is sons and daughters of Christ. The whole reason Jesus died on a cross was so we could be forgiven, to repair that relationship with him, repair that relationship with each other, so that we could live a new life in him. Behold, a new creation. The old life is gone. The new has come. It's not the ending of our story. It's not like Jesus died on the cross. We're saved. Whew, we're good now. No, that's to begin a new name, a new title, a new part of our life. So what if this year we took some time to figure out what that means and just actually start to be the people God made us to be? What if we took the time to figure out, hey, God, I don't see the whole piece of music, but you do. Maybe I can only see these notes right here in this chord. God, tell me who you see me as. Who have you made me to be? Let's pray. Dear Lord, I thank you for who you are. I thank you for how much you love us. I thank you for the fact that when you see us, you don't see us as everyone else sees us. You don't even see us as we ourselves see us. Your view is so much bigger, and you see the whole piece of music that is our lives. So that when you look at us, you see us in this grand view of love that we can't even begin to understand. So God, I pray as this new year begins, as people start to be thinking about making changes in their lives, being new for you, I pray that people hear that you would let them know who they are. Let them know how you see them. Let them know how much you love them. And let them just start to grow and be who you created them to be. In your holy name, I pray.